talking?
Hal jumped up and down.
He's quoting, he shouted. You've got to come. He sounds just like...
Me,
said Vitola, a few minutes later, after they had pulled the lattice into a grove of leafless trees beside the roadside.
Do I sound like that?
Yes,
chorused the company. Young Willikins, who specialised in female roles, prodded Tom John gently as he stood on an upturned barrel in the middle of the clearing.
Here, boy, do you know my speech from Please Yourself? He said.
Tom John nodded.
He is not dead, I say, who lies beneath the stone, for if death could but hear.
They listened in awed silence as the endless mists rolled across the dripping fields and the red ball of the sun floated down the sky. When the boy had finished, hot tears were streaming down Howell's face.
By all the gods,
he said, when Tom John had finished.
I must have been on damn good form when I wrote that.
He blew his nose noisily.
Do I sound like that?
Said Willikins, his face pale. Vitola patted him gently on the shoulder.
If you sounded like that, my bonnie, he said, you wouldn't be standing arse deep in slush in the middle of these forsaken fields with nothing but a liberated cabbage for thy tea.
He clapped his hands.
No more, no more,
he said, his breath making puffs of steam in the freezing air.
Backs to it, everybody. We must be outside the walls of Stolat by sunset.
As the grumbling actors awoke from the spell and wandered back to the shafts of the lattice, Vitola beckoned to the dwarf and put his arm around his shoulders, or rather around the top of his head.
Well,
he said,
you people know all about magic. Or so it is said. What do you make of it?
He spends all his time around the stage, master. It's only natural that he should pick things up,
said Howell vaguely. Vitola leaned down.
Do you believe that?
I believe I heard a voice that took my doggerel and shaped it and fired it back through my ears and straight into my heart, said Howell simply. I believe I heard a voice that got behind the crude shape of the words and said the things I'd meant them to say, but had not the skill to achieve. Who knows where such things come from?
He stared impassively into Vitola's red face.
He may have inherited it from his father, he said.
But...
And who knows what witches may achieve, said the dwarf.
Vitola felt his wife's hand pushed into his. As he stood up, bewildered and angry, she kissed him on the back of the neck. Don't torture yourself, she said. Isn't it all for the best? Your son has declaimed his first word. Spring came, and ex-King Verence still wasn't taking being dead lying down. He prowled the castle relentlessly, seeking a way for a way in which its ancient stones would release their grip on him. He was also trying to keep out of the way of the other ghosts. Champot was all right, if a bit tiresome, but Verence had backed away at the first sight of the twins, toddling hand in hand along the midnight corridors, their tiny ghosts a memorial to a deed darker even than the usual run of regicidal unpleasantness. Then there was the troglodyte wanderer, a rather faded monkey man in a furry loincloth who apparently happened to haunt the castle merely because it had been built on his burial mound. For no obvious reason, a chariot with a screaming woman in it occasionally rumbled through the laundry room, as for the kitchen. One day he'd given in, despite everything old Champot had said, and had followed the smells of cooking into the big, hot, high, domed cavern that served the castle as kitchen and abattoir. Funny thing, that. He'd never been down there since his childhood. Somehow kings and kitchens didn't go well together. It was full of ghosts. But they weren't human. They weren't even proto-human. There were stags. There were bullocks. There were rabbits and pheasants and partridges and sheep and pigs. There were even some round blobby things that looked unpleasantly like the ghosts of oysters.